UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
Now here's Bobby V.
Come on in. All right. We welcome. It's what we want on a Wednesday, which we haven't done a very good job of getting it off the ground. But as always, we welcome flatmate Tom, who has a new name on Wednesdays only. He is now Mr. Knowledge. That's what we're referring to him. That's his feature. We welcome in. That's a great name, Mr.
That's
Knowledge.
That's a great name.
No, Mr. he's Knowledge. Mr. Knowledge. Joining us here with knowledge for We Want to Know Wednesday. We Want to Know Wednesday. We Want to Know Wednesday. So what do we have today, Mr. Knowledge?
I was going to say, I actually looked up that word today for just a completely random reason. What is usually it's meant to insult somebody when you call them a sophist, like they talk about sophistry.
I thought it was a lesbian.
That's sapphostry.
Oh, damn it.
Close.
I was going to say.
We Want to Know Wednesday.
Close.
We Want to Know Wednesday. We Want to Know Wednesday.
No, sophists were, it literally means wise man, like man who knows things. So, but usually it's meant to say like you're being a dick by.
Whoa. Hello. And we go to the drop. Thank you.
Mr. Profanity.
Mr. Knowledge just put us on Mr. Suspension. Very nice. He's multi-talented.
Well, that's what you do on Wednesdays.
Yeah, what's the definition for fine? Stupid.
I got a quarter and some lint in my pocket.
He's now Mr. Infraction. How you doing?
Well, today we are going to talk about not the seven words, but the fact that the Earth is a globe, which is an actual fact that is a real thing. But for some reason, if you go out on the crazy World Wide Web, you'll find that there are some people that walk around this planet today that still think
it's not round.
The Earth is flat.
Yikes.
Some of them play basketball. I don't know. Maybe some of those guys, yeah. But the thing that made me think about it was the old, the tale that you learned when you were in middle school, 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, right?
Right, sure.
And most people in their common knowledge believe that that's when we discovered, he's like, no, the Earth is flat. I can just sail right to China, right?
Well, he was supposedly finding, yes, a new Western route.
Yes.
Go ahead.
But the thing was, is he knew perfectly well that the Earth was round. That was the whole reason he was thinking about going that direction in the first place, right? So let's talk about how long ago did people figure this out? So 2,500 years ago, 500 years before the birth of Christ, the very intelligent Greeks such as Pythagoras, also known as the guy with the triangles.
Yes, I love Pythagoras because I had a plain geometry teacher who made it the most entertaining academic course I've ever taken in my life. So.
Not a plain geography teacher or a geometry, but a plain, not boring.
No. Right, exactly. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But Pythagoras and Aristotle actually had it pretty much figured out. And how did they? There are many ways you can just do this on your own, but they looked at lunar eclipses, when the Earth passes in front of the sun from the moon's perspective. And they looked at the shadow that the Earth cast on the moon.
Ah.
And they said, no matter where you are, no matter when you're looking at it, it's always a circle.
So therefore,
the only shape that can cast a circle shadow in all directions
is a circle.
Is a globe, right?
How about that?
So they said this is obvious proof. But there are many other
things. So who's the NBA? Kyrie Irving?
Irving.
Yeah, we need to get him on this.
Bring him in next Wednesday and we'll interview him. We'll
grill him.
But you can do this, you can prove it on your own. One, if you say you went to Miami and then you went to Alberta or something like that, or Toronto,
right?
You'll see different stars in the sky because of the different places on the Earth that you're looking at.
That's
right?
True. Or if it were flat, it wouldn't be
the,
that.
Right.
Be
the further
case.
South you go, you can even do it if you go to the beach, which is always a nice thing. You lay down flat on the beach and you watch the sunset and you wait till the sun goes below the horizon. Then you stand up really fast. Try not to faint.
Okay.
But if you stand up really fast, you can see the sunset all over again because that's enough of a height difference. To
just
see the difference.
That? Just a little six
just
feet
that.
Of standing?
Wow. And still these people are crazy. But 2,500 years ago, they weren't trying to prove the Earth was a globe. They were already trying to figure out how far around it
how
was.
How far it went.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Eratosthenes, he was an Egyptian guy, Greek-Egyptian, and he said, I heard that there's a place in Egypt where Alexandria, where when the sun is directly overhead at the summer solstice, basically, the sun shines all the way to the bottom of this water well, right? And he's like, well, I know there's a well basically along the same line of longitude that the sun is not directly shining all the way down into the well. So he measured the difference between the angles in the well in Alexandria
for
the sun and the shadow cast in the one in Greece. And said, this is a bit, and he got, it was like probably within 4 or 5% of the actual true value. He was pretty close. And that was 2,500 years ago, right?
So that's way before Columbus or anybody else. Texas said Columbus was looking for a quicker route to India, not China. That's why he called the natives Indians.
Very good. That's accurate, yes.
Okay, so you are correct. Mr. Knowledge nods approval on that.
Asia in general, yes. That's why they're called the West Indies and the East Indies is because, you know. But the reason he thought, I can do this, is because he didn't rely on Eratosthenes' calculation. He relied on Ptolemy's calculation, which was much smaller.
Good Lord.
So he thought the Earth was round. He just thought it was a lot smaller and it wouldn't take him as long to get there.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, 8 months into his voyage or whatever, when
his
all
men
these
were
guys
mad.
Are, they were pretty ticked off with him.
Hey, Chris, I thought you said we'd be there by Friday. It's a little bigger than I thought, man.
So, yeah, I mean, he lucked out, honestly. He was pretty close to losing the whole thing. And then he's like, holy crap, land. Thank God.
Just what I thought it was. See? Kind of.
Exactly.
Very good.
But, yeah, and that helped. And then not too long after that, like, you know, less than 30 years after that, Magellan started his voyage. Again, he traveled all the way around the world, which is a globe. But here's one of the fun, obscure facts of history is Magellan may have been the first person to start a successful circumnavigation of the globe, but he was not the first person to finish it because he got killed in the Philippines.
I didn't know that.
Who was
those
the person?
Damn Filipinos.
Who was the person or people? Only 18 of the 170 original voyagers on that Magellan voyage, it took 3 years, made it back to Spain, and they were in pretty bad shape when they got there.
Yeah.
So the question is, who was the guy that was in charge by the time they made it back? And his name was Juan Sebastian Elcano. So if anybody asks you, you know, who was the first person to circumnavigate the world, and they say Magellan, you're like, no!
Why doesn't he have a GPS system named after him then?
That's totally, I don't understand.
What's his name, Juan Sebastian?
Juan Sebastian Elcano.
Let's start our own GPS company, and we'll name it after him.
Juan Sebastian.
Yes. I got on my Sebastian de Cano. What's his last name?
Juan Sebastian Elcano.
Well, I got on my Elcano, and it got me here in 20 minutes. What are you still, you, Ned Magellan? Your guy got killed.
I keep getting stabbed in the Philippines.
Here's another random one for you. Of course, we all know GPS, right?
Sure.
But and this is not a dirty word, I promise. The Russian version of GPS is called GLONASS. So if anybody talks about GLONASS, then that's just they're just talking about
I thought that was when
GPS.
You sat on a bunch of fireflies.
Yeah, that too. Or
what?
If you,
what'd I say?
I'm speechless.
And wrapping things up, other things you can do, like if the Concorde was still around, that would be super nice because that was an awesome plane. But people used to take off, like the sun would set in London. They would take off in London and fly to New York, and they would see the sun rise again in the sky and then go up on top of the Empire State Building and watch it set twice in one day.
See, because I've often said
that's
that.
Awesome.
This will make your head spin and make people break out in a sweat. But you have to do this one time. I actually took a balloon and did this in the newsroom at ESPN, of all things. We had a lot of extra time. I suggest if you go to the timeline for your birthday and ride the world all the way around and then just before you're about to cross it, jump back over. You can spend 47 hours in your birthday.
Absolutely.
You could have a 47-hour birthday.
There are
people. Because it's like a ride. You're riding it around, and imagine this arbitrary line that's hanging over your head, and just as you're about to get over, whoop, you jump back over, and you get to ride it all the way around again.
There are people that do that for New Year's. They start in Sydney, Australia, and they'll fly the opposite way around the world and end up in Hawaii. And basically celebrate New Year's every possible place they can.
See, we did that on the show one
year.
That's
awesome.
That was I missed that back when we used to do fun stuff like that. I had to, you asked to do it, and then you get an extra day off somewhere else. So I said, fine, I'll work New Year's Eve. I don't really do anything anyway. So I said, let's see if we can get somebody on the show. We were on from 7 p.m. till 2 a.m., I think. And so we went and we tried to get people in every time zone to come on. And there's one little time zone, and it's really hard. There's only like a very small island. And God bless this producer. I can't remember what her name was now. She's moved on. But she found this island and this tiny little like hotel there. And we got the bartender to come on.
Wow.
And it was like, I mean, he had no idea who we were, what ESPN was. But we had him on. So we celebrated New Year for 7 straight hours.
That may have been the best day of his life. You never know.
Well, it was a great day for us. We had a ball. It was hilarious. It really was fun. But yes.
But speaking of balls and wrapping things up, we talked about definitely the Earth is a globe. Anybody out there who thinks it's not, well, I got some news for you. But it's actually not a perfect sphere. The Earth is not a perfect sphere. Now, of course, you got all the little
stats. Wait a minute. I remember in school they said if you could take the Earth, it's rounder than a ball bearing.
No. Well, if you talk about the ratio, it's like 1 to 230. And it's pretty close to the level of a ball bearing. But it's not a perfect. In other words, a perfect sphere would have a 1 to 1 in terms of width, poles and equator and everything. But the Earth is spinning in a circle, right?
Sure, let's hope
so. And it's spinning fast enough. Not fast enough to make us fly off into space or anything
Thank
like
God.
That. Thank God.
I hate
exactly.
when that happens.
That is very painstaking and requires a lot of effort. But it is spinning fast enough that the equator bulges out just a little bit, just like, some of us who maybe eat a little bit too much.
The equator needs vitality, wellness, and weight loss.
That's what you can tell people is, I didn't eat too much. I just spin around really fast all the time. So. because it's spinning, the poles are actually squished in a little bit compared to where the equator is. And so when you say, what's the tallest mountain in the world? Everybody says Mount Everest, right? Naturally. Well, it's the tallest mountain above sea level. One, it's not even the tallest mountain, period, because that's Mauna Kea in Hawaii. That's actually taller from base to peak.
That's underwater, though, right?
Yeah, most of it's underwater, which is why people say, well, that doesn't count, right? Everest is the tallest above sea level.
It's the highest spot above sea level.
But the highest spot on the planet Earth, like standing on the ground but farthest away from the center of the Earth, is actually Mount Chimborazo in, I think, Ecuador. Yeah. And it's because the bulge of the equator pushes that mountain farther away from the core of the Earth than anything else. So that is your fact.
That's a lot of stuff.
The Earth is round on We Want to Know Wednesday. And sorry for being a Richard earlier.
Texter says Ptolemy is overrated.
Ptolemy is overrated. He's a Richard.
Whoa. All right, we'll have to go read up on him.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Nah.
I like this, though. We have a little conflict going here, but I think this is what I do. I manage to calm things down. Geez, what am I, chopped liver? I thought I was the king of information of We Want to Know Wednesday. Signed, Birdhead Ryan.
Well.
And I said, you are the emperor of information. Also good title. So he's Mr. Knowledge. Birdhead Ryan is emperor of information. Ryan says, I like that title better.
I agree with that.
Now he's mad. Now I made him mad. Well, you're the executive Mr. Information.
I want a title.
You are the stir Duke, that straws the drink.
Duke of dumb stuff. I know a lot of dumb knowledge.
Why are they showing Duke and Louisville's game from Louisville last year? What the hell is that on for?
Well, I don't know the answer to that one, so I'm going to get out of here.
All right, Mr. Knowledge, ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Mr. Knowledge. Very nice. Lots of things happened in the 10 minutes we were talking. The Mets named Luis Rojas their new manager. He was a guy I know they interviewed when they went through the first go-round, so I don't know much about him myself, to be quite honest with you. They also gave D'Souza a indefinite suspension. So that means we don't know when it comes back. Bob, have you talked about the decision to put 1 second back on the clock after the melee last night? I'm sure it was correct by the book, but should there be an alternative for situations like that? Well, whether there should or there shouldn't, the fact of the matter is, there isn't. And so they did their job, which was They, when you go back and you see when that play happened, there's still time on the clock. Their job is to referee it to the finish line. And so, you know, they refereed it to the finish line, and that meant they had to call guys back out to shoot the technicals, which were that's why they're showing. Excuse me. That's obvious. How stupid. They're showing the Duke-Louisville game from last year because the Zion's in it. Duh. so that's why that's up there. But, yeah, they did their job. I mean, I didn't, you know, I guess Drew lost his mind over it this morning. Somebody, I was roll my eyes worthy. I thought, oh, that's unfortunate. But I didn't make a big deal of it because they're just doing their job. That's what the rule says. The rule says until there's no time on the clock, the referees are in charge of the game. And that's not an option for them. They can't just decide, oh, the game's over. They don't have that authority unless, you know, you think that the people are in, you know, I guess there's a riot breaking out or something. But by that point, the building was 90% empty. Everybody gone home, basically. So he had to call them back out and shoot the free throws. It's a silly optic, and it doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of difference. I mean, it didn't even affect the point spread. But imagine it had. Imagine you were a guy who was going to lose by a point, and then they come out and hit the free throws and you win. You would have been mad if they didn't call them back out. So that's why they make it black and white. The rule is there's time on the clock. Called the game, and the policy there is if it happens, I guess it was a tenth of a second or something to go, you got to shoot the technicals and get it in the books properly. So believe me, I promise you, the players did not want any part of coming out and shoot them either. Everybody wanted to just get the hell out of there, but that's the idea. What else we got here? Is this a good one? Some people try and slip things in hoping I read it on the air cold, so then I'll say something potty worded.
Well, you already said something kind of funny.
What did I say?
Slip it in. Hey, how you doing?
Thank you, Beavis.
120.
In the early 1970s. Wow, that sounds like it's something that would have happened. It sounds so bizarre. This right now is the early leader in facts. No disrespect to Mr. Knowledge.
We want to know Wednesday.
In the early 70s, so many planes were being hijacked to Cuba, the U.S. government actually considered building a replica of Havana's airport in Florida to fool the hijackers. That sounds hilarious. Like something we would do, because I didn't realize until I watched that special on World War II that we had that whole fake attack set up in France with inflatable tanks. And did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, you got to watch this. The Normandy invasion, everyone was convinced that wasn't the place that we would attack because it was wider and it was less logical. And so they went along with the idea that we were going to attack. I forget where it actually was. I have to go look it up. It's been a couple of weeks since I watched it, and I'm not studying for an exam, so I didn't remember names and dates. But the premise is absolutely true. They took, I think it was MacArthur, and they made him have a fake army.
MacArthur was
a general.
Yeah, but I think he was in the Pacific Theater.
It was Patton. No, it wasn't Eisenhower.
Eisenhower and Patton were in Europe.
Maybe it was Patton. Whatever. They took a general, it must have been Patton, and they had him do a fake army. I mean, a bona fide fake army. In fact, the soldiers themselves didn't know that they weren't going to invade there. Some of them, not all of them. I mean, there's a lot of layers to this. The people right at the site knew because they built a bunch of inflatable tanks, things that looked like the real thing. They were inflatable. You got to watch the special. Guy walks over to the tank and he reaches up with one hand. He pulls the top off, the turret off. I was like, what the hell? And then explain, these were the inflatable things that they used so that the spy planes would see them and say, oh, they're getting ready for an attack over there, and there was nothing there. All the real buildup was elsewhere.
They did that. I can't remember if it was...
That's a good we want to know.
That is a good one. I think Japan did the same thing. I could be wrong, but I think like in the whole Battle of Midway or whatever, the Allies bombed what they thought was like a Japanese radar ship, and then they saw like all
the... It was actually a pachinko parlor.
No, oh. They saw like the radar dish like floating in the water, and like realized that they had hit like a cardboard cutout like replica boat that was just meant to be like a fake.
It was the Ghost Army. Rather than continue to try and do it from watching, if you have not seen it, go on. I've told you this. It's on Twitter, not on Twitter. It's on YouTube. It's called World War II in Color. They took all this old footage and recolorized it, and it's a 10-part series that I binged watched one weekend. It's fantastic, and it was called the Ghost Army, and it fooled Hitler. Their job was to. They had a bunch of soldiers. They were recruited actually from art schools and ad agencies. These soldiers, they were sought for their acting skills. They were selected for creativity because they weren't there to try and battle. They were there to fool. They were there to fool Hitler. They were part of the 23rd Headquarters Special Troops, better known as the Ghost Army, a troop of soldiers that doubled in Europe's theater as a troop of actors. They were essentially the Trojan horse builders. That's a good way of putting it, of World War II. Instead of wooden horses, though, they used inflatable tanks, rubber airplanes, and elaborate costumes. They used radio codes that blared pre-recorded soundtracks into the forests of France. This advanced technology were amazingly effective. The Ghost Army were 1,100 men in all, and they ended up staging more than 20 battlefield deceptions between 44 and 45. But the most notable was starting in Normandy 2 weeks after D-Day. They served their purpose. They had a 93-pound inflatable tank. I mean, I can't help it. That's kind of funny. I realize people are losing their lives over this. This is serious business, but it definitely helped us win the war. There's no question about it. And it's a great story. I only saw it in the special on Netflix once. But I guess they did it a number of times, according to this article. They moved them to a number of places. And they would sometimes, like, do ill-conceived camouflage, as if, like, oh, look what we uncovered here. It was like they were, you know, they couldn't be so obvious that they were trying to be discovered, but they were making it so that they would be discovered.
Oh, so, like, they would shoddily disguise it.
Yes. They called it ill-camouflage.
That's hilarious.
It's unbelievable. And they used sound. The Bell Laboratories put a team up. They got a special group from Fort Knox, here we go, to record sounds of armored and infantry units, and then they played them, blared them. So it sounded like a whole bunch of stuff was going on there, when all it was record players, tape decks, and inflatable stuff, and a bunch of actors in costume. They said that they played it so well, they amplified it with such powerful amps that you could actually hear the sounds 15 miles away.
Wow.
Yeah. I think my roommate had that in college, if I'm not mistaken. It's incredible. They had actors pretend that they were radio operators, and they gave them fake copy to read, and that so that they'd be intercepted and all of this.
I'd love for there to be the one guy who takes it way too seriously and is speaking with great diction. And it's just like, no, dude, you're supposed to be an army guy. Stop it. And he's just like, I have to be in character.
Scene. That would have been bad.
Instead of over, that's how he ends it.
Evidently.
The coordinates are 332196. And scene.
The Ghost Army is effectively one of the most underappreciated groups of heroes of the Second World War, according to this article, because it's estimated to have saved literally tens of thousands of soldiers' lives with their deception. They were instrumental in not just the one victory we're talking about, but it was Calais. Thank you. A texter just sent me that. The fake attack was for Calais. That's exactly where that was the most logical place they were supposed to attack. And that's the one that's in the movie. It's really good. Wasn't for D-Day. Not D-Day. Patton came through Africa, Sicily, into Italy. Not D-Day.
I'd love for there to be. That would be a great History Channel show or something like
what
that.
What would be?
Like Great Deceptions. Something like that.
Oh, that would
plays.
Be.
Like great trick
plays.
But, I
mean, you're going to have a hard time getting footage on, like, the Trojan War. I don't think there's much out
but
there.
But they do the cool little CGI things that are always fun. Those things keep getting better and better. But a caller called in, like the Argo. That would be a fun one. I mean, pretending to be a movie and getting people out of Iran. I mean, that's got to rank up there, one of the all-time great trick plays.
Yeah, well, it is. I didn't know that. The story's fascinating. I mean, I'm not so well versed in. If somebody's, I'm sure there are many listeners who are World War II historians. There's a whole, it's fascinating. It is fascinating. So you wouldn't do it just like to be an academician. You do it because it's an interesting story. But the fact is, that was the first I'd heard of it, and that's kind of sad. I'm a little disappointed about that. But so if you're a World War II historian, you must be saying, as I'm talking about, no, it was here. No, it was there. But it was Calais. That's the one that was the one that was featured in. It's got to remember, they covered how many years the war went in 10 one-hour specials. So they certainly didn't cover everything about it in great detail. But it was, for somebody like me, it was a tremendously informative and entertaining experience. It was the by the way, when I said not D-Day, it was not D-Day for Patton. This was, though, part of the D-Day deception that was that set. And that's what I remember hearing some of the – there were still some survivors. I mean, you know, survivors is a bad word, but, you know, there were soldiers that were in that attack that are interviewed for this special, and they're, I don't know, how old are they now, 90, 88, 90, 92, whatever they are, but still very sharp. And they said when they took off, they did not know where they were going, that they got out, and Calais, I guess, was, for lack of a, you know, make it simple, to the left, and all of a sudden the boat they were on turned right, and they're like, where the hell are we going? They're like, ooh, yes, we're not going to Calais. Yuck, 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 yuck.
For all you guys invading, Calais, step four, not so fast. Whoop.
I'm amazed. I you know, this is going to sound like a suck up, but I don't really give a rat's ass. To any veterans listening, I mean, I was not, they'd done away with the draft by the time I came along. I didn't, and you know, enlist. I was not part of the volunteers. So I've never served. And I watch shows like this, and it is not overly dramatic when you get somebody who wants to just say thank you. The stuff that they endured, and this, they, and I think about it. I mean, they were just average citizens. I mean, a lot of them, they were just people that, you know, you took from their walk of life and brought them over there and trained them. I'm reading Eisenhower's book right now, which is a fascinating read. Very, very interesting read. It's more lighthearted. I guess he'd written another historical account that was much more, you know, about his generalship, for lack of a better word. This is more of a loose. It's got funny stories in his life. He was kind of a rabble rouser when he was young. I didn't know that. He was like, he's taking shots at the army all the time about how crazy the red tape and the bureaucracy is, and how pissed off he got at them all his whole career. It's a fascinating story. But this, if you've not seen it, honestly, it's not a matter of, oh, you should know that. It's not that. It's a tremendously interesting piece, the World War II in color on Netflix. I can't recommend it enough. I may go back and watch it again, to be honest with you. It was so informative and interesting. The whole thing, it's pretty amazing. Patton was not at or near Normandy. Okay, if I gave that impression, I thought I said I don't know. I was trying to say I don't know who was there, who was in charge. It was a famous general, though.
I think it was Eisenhower.
I know was part of it. It was not Eisenhower. Trust me.
I thought it was Eisenhower.
He MacArthur was not had the fake army. He didn't Eisenhower.
Ghost army. They put
I'm telling you, there was a significant general who was in charge of the fake army. It wasn't Eisenhower.
General Sherman.
I don't know. I'm going to look it up now because
General Washington.
There we go. General
Skywalker.
What about when your computer screws up? What does it say, General?
Virus? What?
Oh, man, oh, man. You used to get that screen all the time, General.
Blue screen of death.
No. Anybody want to send that in, too? That'd be great. But it used to come up all the time.
General Disarray?
What? No, you don't know, so you're just throwing words at General Waffle, General Pancake. Not going to get it. You're not going to stumble on the word.
General Disarray.
It used to come up on your screen all the time. Got to remember, I have computers back from the days when, you know, chimpanzees were in charge of, or what are they, the guys on the wheels?
Zippity, the hamster.
Yeah, Zippity hamsters were
Zippity's ancestors.
The power.
Was this before the Microsoft paperclip?
Let's see. Here it is. Well,
Biscuit said I said
this guy is saying
earlier.
Patton was nowhere near there.
I meant Iran.
Now I'm looking it up, and it says Patton's Ghost Army. D-Day's deception. It was Patton. I was right the first time. George Patton fielded a fake army for he was in charge of overseeing the ghost army. He was part of the deception. Thank you. So he was part of the deception. They figured the Germans would be watching his moves more than not. General Bradley was actually in charge of the invasion. That's what it was. You're exactly right. Bradley was in charge of the invasion. Patton was part of the deception. Because Patton was a high-profile general, and they figured they'd be watching his every move, and he was. So
and Eisenhower was in charge of – he was the head guy, right?
Yes, he was in charge of the whole damn thing. He was the CEO, such as it were.
Was he head of the whole army or just the army in Europe? And MacArthur was – I know he was in the Pacific Theater.
Why are you making it sound like I'm a professor of history? I watched a 10-part special on Netflix. That's my only claim to fame here.
First off,
I can tell you he was in color. He was in color. I can tell you that. They had color.
Seems kind of racist of you.
They were colors. They were colorized. They were not black and white.
When I was a little kid, I really thought that, like,
the world
I mean,
was
a little kid. Like, yeah. Like, I thought you know, back in the day, like, everyone was, yeah, just shades of gray. And to this day now, they still are, just in a different way. Oh, that kind of rhymed. Anyway, I'm tap dancing so you can Google this damn thing instead of chastising me. You don't have it?
It's pissing me off. Because it used to come up all the damn time, and now I can't remember it. General something. Cause they actually,
you're looking up the damn computer thing. I was talking about MacArthur.
I've gotten as much information as I'm going to get. We've gone too far in the rabbit hole here. Evidently, they were both involved. Patton was involved. It was Bradley who was actually in charge. Patton was in charge of the dummy army, and he wasn't happy about it, but he was. Eisenhower's decision to do that. He oversaw the whole damn thing, and it was a fascinating story. And if you want to get more, watch the special, because I'm not a history major, although I appreciate and enjoy history tremendously. But
all right, so Biscuit just texted me.
Okay.
So that Eisenhower was the supreme Allied commander. Yes. So he was in charge of the whole damn thing.
Right.
And then I think MacArthur was the 4-star general over in the Pacific Theater. And I think, hey, that's an alarm clock. I don't know what for, though.
And Patton was over there, and they put him in charge of the dummy army.
Yeah,
for good reason. But it was like using Wara as a decoy on a last second shot. They were all going to be looking at him. And so then they let Bradley take the shot, and he took it to the basket, dumped it, and got fouled.
It's Bradley.
General Omar Bradley.
Yeah, no, but I mean, what U of L player is he? Samuel Williams. No. David Johnson.
If you go by second leading score, it would be Enoch, but that's...
If you said David. He drove in, so I kind of...
Oh, my God. You are exasperating. You really are. Wow. How about General Sal? That's it. They were all busy eating chicken. There you go. All right. Well, that was.
We want to know Wednesday.
We need some more good Wednesday facts.
We want to know Wednesday.
Let's see.
I want some chicken. I think I'm going to have some chicken today.
You're allowed to because we're on Vitality. Vitality Wellness and Weight Loss. The guy just texted me and said, in all honesty, is it a good program? It's the best program. And he said, is it easy to follow? It's simple to follow. Nothing we ever really want is easy in that regard, but it is simple to follow and it is easier than most, in fact, all of the other diet programs I've ever used. You get, like, last night, I was getting hungry at night, and I talked to our guy, Sterling Archer, and I said, you know, what about that? And he said, you're not doing it right. I said, what do you mean? He said, there's no way you should be hungry. I said, why? He said, go look at the list of vegetables. Do you like them? I said, oh, there's a whole bunch of them on there I like. They're good. There's like 15 of them. He said, eat all you want of them. Eat all of them. Just eat until you can't get up from the table. It's all legal. And that's the thing that I've never had on any other program. They always tell you, oh, you get plenty of food. But then they don't get plenty of food. And I'm hungry. And on this one, it just teaches you what to eat, what are the things you should eat, and can last you a lifetime. And it's really helping me. I've always been somebody who understood. It's kind of like the golf swing. You can understand the mechanics of it, but until you master the components of it, you can't do it. This program helps you master the components. Most of you know, here we go. Do you need me to tell you, you shouldn't eat really high-calorie food? You shouldn't eat food in saturated fats? You shouldn't eat... Wow, did I just learn that today? I can't just eat a big bowl of sugar from the morning? No, that's... Yeah, you don't need me to tell you that. Okay, so if you know the general principles, how do you incorporate those into something that you can replicate? A great golf swing, you'd replicate over and over. A great eating plan is something you can do every day in your life. That's what this teaches you. How can you put an eating plan in place that you can replicate day after day so you will lose weight, you'll feel better, you'll look better, and most importantly, you'll be healthier. And that's the single thing about this. It's different. I was amazed. We were talking because Nathan's doing it, Nick's doing it, I'm doing it, and we were comparing notes. Nathan's like, I take 5 supplements. I take 4 supplements. I was like, well, I've got 3. And then we listed it, and they're not the same because that's the whole point. It's not just one size fits all. Let's put some tea leaves in a bag or something and convince these people it's some magic elixir. It's not. They scan your body, and you can see what nutrients you are lacking, what minerals you're lacking, and they give you the supplements to make you healthier. And frankly, you don't get as hungry because your body is sending you messages all the time. There's a lot of times what you're interpreting as, oh, I'm still hungry, is simply your body saying, I don't have everything I need right here. So you go keep eating the stuff you've been eating, and your body's like, well, that's great. Now I got a bunch of crap in my stomach, but I still don't have what I need. And you're like, how the hell am I still hungry? Well, that's why. And this is the way that you can solve that and learn how to do it and go forward. It's a terrific program. I just can't speak highly enough about it. You have a personal guy that you can call him. He's like on call all the time. There we go. People are going to be calling Sterling at like 3 in the morning. Bob said I can call you. You know, but the fact is they really are there to help. They're a pleasure to deal with, and you get results. That's the other thing. It's all well and good if I told you that's true. But, hey, I lost a half a pound in 3 weeks. You'll be amazed how fast the weight comes off, because once you get into fat-burning mode, man, it really, you hear that all the time, it just melts off. Well, it really does with this. It's that good. So check them out, Vitality Wellness and Weight Loss. They got one location in southern Indiana, one here right off Bardstown Road in Louisville. It's the best one I've ever used, and you will like it as well. So check them out, Vitality Wellness and Weight Loss. Oh, there we go. Took a shave. Is Jamie available to produce the show? LOL. There you go.
Huh? For what? I don't get it.
Because you were, you know, you were like taking me down rabbit holes before.
Oh, right.
There is a scene in Patton, the movie, that describes his role in construction of the Ghost Army. See, there you go.
Oh, okay. I've never actually seen the whole movie. I've just seen that famous opening scene, which is awesome.
Here's your trivia question. It's part of a We Want to Know Wednesday. The Grammys come up this weekend.
We Want to Know Wednesday.
We Want to Know Wednesday. Which three presidents have won a Grammy?
Presidents have won Grammys?
Yes, there have been three that have won Grammys.
Ronald Reagan.
Probably for spoken word stuff.
Ronald Reagan.
That would be wrong.
He acted. I don't know.
Right. That's a Grammys for music.
Bill Clinton played the saxophone.
Bill Clinton has won, but he won it for playing the sax. None of these guys won it for playing the sax.
Barack Obama?
Barack Obama's two. And the Republicans will be mad. They're all Democrats.
That's
typical. Hollywood's take care of their own bastards.
Let's see. Before or after 1950?
After.
That was a stupid question. I don't think the Grammys were around before 1950. Kennedy.
No, after Kennedy.
Jimmy Carter.
Exactly.
Really?
Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama.
Wow. There we go.
Have all won Grammys. That's what we want to know Wednesday.
Also, Biscuit was texting me. Dwight Eisenhower, Ike, MacArthur, Bradley, General Marshall, and Hap Arnold were all five-star generals during World War II.
Very nice.
And see? I think you can only be a five-star general during wartime. So there's no, if we're all at peace, everything's happy, everyone's a four-star. Only when
Well, that's
when
the problem with
real.
A lot of countries. If you don't get the five stars, you can't win. I mean, that's the thing. That's like, I mean, we got some generals. I'm telling you, there's a general out there. He's a two-star. I don't know what that says about our country. We should be able to get the four stars. I went on scouting 24/7. I went on, you know, everybody knows
Rush
everything.
Smith was a two-star.
This is ridiculous. This is the problem with our government right now. We can't recruit the five stars, and I think that's a problem. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen. Okay, you're an asset. Now, let's go to the next call. No, it's a joke. This is true, by the way. Martin Luther King's speech, I Have a Dream. If you watch the film, this guy's right. It started out as a disaster. The crowd was restless. They weren't interested. And an associate suggested he tell them about his dream. And he ad-libbed it from there. That's why you can see he's got no notes. And it went on to be one of the greatest speeches in the 20th century. It is. And that's really true. So there you go. I can't read that on the air, but that was attempt at humor. I guess that's enough. So who we got? What are we doing next?
We have Eric Crawford.
Eric Crawford.
Yeah, we should take a short break here.
All right, we'll take a very short break. Tiny little break, small break.
Just a little one.
Fabulous.
You're listening to The V-Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Stage is set. It's down to the best. We crown the champion of the National Football League. Don't miss out. Get in on all the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. DraftKings Sportsbook is the place to get all your big-game bets in. Head to the app right now and check out all they have to offer, including countless prop bets and football squares. Plus, DraftKings is a safe, secure, and reliable betting app. You can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. To top it all off, DraftKings Sportsbook is offering their best sign-up offer to date right now. And this is, remember, the app that's voted the number one sportsbook app in the country. And that will give you a deal to make it even more attractive for you. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code WHBE. And for a limited time, all new users can get a sign-up bonus of up to $1,000. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook is going all out with a sign-up bonus of up to $1,000. $1,000. Don't forget, that's code WHBE and get your sign-up bonus up to $1,000 only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 or older, Indiana only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus and a first bet match, each up to $500. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions apply. DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. So there you go. We want to know Wednesday. We'll have some good ones. The Martin Luther King speech was a good one. The Grammys one about the three presidents was a good one. The fake airfield in the 70s, because they were, I remember that. They were hijacking planes left and right. That was a good one.
We want to know Wednesday. So, we want to know Wednesday.
There you go. If you got any more good ones, send them to us at what the hell is our number here? 437-9680 is the text line. 437-9680. And send it to us there. Are we getting a guest on here or not? Yes, guess we are. Which line would you like it? There he is. Hello, Eric. How are you?
I'm good.
Let's jump right into the ugly, shall we? What about the fight last night? What'd you make
about it? You know, I was just everywhere I go. It's been somebody wanting to talk about what happened and what I don't know. I'm trying to figure out. You know, all I've seen is like the videos. I haven't really done a lot of looking into. How does that something like that get started? Is it just fire up? Just heated emotions?
Players are a bit thin-skinned now, more than maybe years ago.
And they're getting stuff yelled at them that they didn't get yelled at.
That's true.
I don't know.
Well, the play that started it, as you probably know by now, is D'Souza was trying to dribble out the clock, and you know they were not playing. The coaches called off the dogs, and in that protocol is you just stand there and let the clock run out, and the kid from Kansas State stripped him. And so he was like, oh, yeah, well, then I'm going to play too. And he ran back and blocked it. And at that point, it could have just been a little bit of a uncomfortable moment, but then D'Souza stood over him and taunted him, and then all hell broke loose. That's when it all started at that point. So.
And it spills over. And I always remember this story from the 50s when Kentucky All-American Wa Jones was getting heckled in the garden, in Madison Square Garden, and he finally just reached around and grabbed the guy by his dress, by his shirt, by the necktie, and punched him. And Jones was left holding the guy's shirt and tie in his hand. The guy had fallen off, knocked his block off. And to me, you know, that's bad. And you know, if there were video, it'd be awful. But I'm like, you know, there's a limit to what guys can take. But that's just a stupid
situation. Well, this evidently was all just because of the players. I don't think this had much to do with the fans. This was just a player thing. But it was it was ugly. There's not much getting around that. Yeah. They've suspended D'Souza indefinitely, and now the league's going to get involved. I spoke with the supervisor of officials for the league today, but as he said, Curtis Shaw, he told me, you know, this has nothing to do with us, really. This is a league-wide deal for a suspension. We called the game, and, you know, they made the players come back out as they're supposed to do and shoot those technical free throws, and, you know, and that's what they did. And then their job is done. So, I don't know what the question about it is. If they are, I mean, as you probably again know, the ruling was that they threw out all the players on both benches for leaving the bench.
Yeah.
And so that means if you suspended them, I mean, you got to stagger. What are they going to do? Going to the next game with just five players? I mean, you can't do that.
Forfeit. So, I mean, you know, to me, that should be that. You forfeit it. You lose it. That's it.
Wow.
But I don't think you can do that because you got a commitment to probably most of all to ESPN, which televises or whoever has that next game that these teams are in. So you can't just not play. So I don't know how it gets into a lot of complications beyond just what happens on the court. But, you know, in some sense, that's really everybody, that's the worst that they've seen. And it is when you watch it. It's just awful. It's not a new thing. I mean, I've seen some pretty scary stuff break out of basketball games. I saw a whole end zone erupt into a fight at the Owensboro Sports Center once at a Kentucky Wesleyan game.
Really?
But that wasn't any players involved. That was just fans. So that's different. But these games, people are emotional about them. That's why we have jobs.
Well, it is. It was ugly. It was really, he picked the chair up, and once it goes into the crowd, I mean, it could have been a riot. I mean, it really could have. It's not like far fetched. It could have been a riot. Absolutely. Let's move on to some other things, shall we? Let's move on to The
other thing people are telling me that I'm getting everywhere, they just expect David Johnson, I think, to get 19-7 every game from here forward, because Louisville's a changed team, and they're going to roll through the rest of it. I just kind of laugh when I hear that, because, you know, he may score 2 points tonight. We don't know. He may score 20, but it's been funny to see that reaction this week everywhere I've gone. Johnson, and we'll see how good he continues to be, how consistent he is.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I say that, then people are like, oh, you don't think he's any good? No, that's not what we're saying at all. I think he's going to be. He's already very good, and he's only going to get better. But that it's, you know, that it's like say, well, it's you know what the analogy is. It's amazing how easy people want to dismiss that Ryan McMahon had 17 points against Notre Dame. Like, well, he's not going to be able to keep doing that. But David can keep doing this in every game. I mean, as a freshman, he's much more. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's more athletic. Yeah, he is. But you know, that was a perfect matchup for him to use those skills, just like Notre Dame was a perfect matchup for Ryan, who, you know, they're not super athletic, and he could get his shot off. So I'm afraid, because you know what happens. If he comes out and scores like 4 next game, they're either going to be all over Chris, it's Chris's fault, or, see, I told you he wasn't that good. And the truth is probably neither of those things.
Well, and the other thing is that, you know, people watch film, and he's on it now.
You're right.
They're going to watch that. Let's not forget, he had 2 points in the second half of that game against Duke. It's not like that, you know, they didn't go in there and say, all right, we got to shut this guy down. And that's what, you know, they're able to get to make adjustments, and adjustments get made. So you can't just keep doing what you always do. But I saw a headline. It was like, emergence of Johnson makes Louisville a title contender. Well, you know, he's had a couple good games. You know, if he emerged, we'll see. I think we're so analytical in our culture now that everything has to be analyzed immediately.
Yep.
And if it's wrong, then you change your analysis the next day and you move on. But let's see how he winds up.
Talking to Eric Crawford from WDRB here. Our mutual friend Pat Forty and I had a little back and forth on Twitter. I thought it was respectful, but it was a difference of opinion. He is of the belief that this is like a train wreck of a year for college basketball, and he kind of used the fight yesterday as a platform to try and build that argument. And I do agree, there's no dominant teams. There's nobody like a Zion Williamson. But the fact of the matter is, I still think it's a very interesting season, and I think it's a very entertaining season. Every game is definitely one that is, to me, worth watching, especially since Eric, you know, you don't even know who's going to be in the tournament. Like, you, other years, you could say, well, I don't have to watch Carolina. They're in, or, you know, or Virginia or Syracuse. None of them may make it. I mean, all of those teams are going to be still with some work to do. So I think it's a little overreaction to just write the year off because there's no great players or great teams. What say you?
Yeah, you know, that's to me, that's a little bit of the college football, you know, mentality where if Alabama's down, it's not a great year. If Notre Dame's down, it's not a great year. That only applies if you're not interested in watching, you know, different guys come up and be the main teams.
Exactly.
And I think this is one of those great years. I mean, and I get it because the media, and I don't like to paint it with that big a brush, but, you know, I'm watching Kentucky-Georgia last night, and they all of a sudden throw a Zion Williamson graphic up on the screen. They want another Zion, and there's not one right now. So, what, you know, that doesn't mean it's not a great year. It doesn't mean it's not entertaining. I mean, if chaos is what you look for, and nobody delivers chaos like college basketball, and it hasn't delivered it like it has in this regular season very often. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, it's what Pitino always told his teams, look, it's all about the final exam. And if this is a great NCAA tournament, I don't think you're going to hear a lot of people talking about them not being great teams if we wind up with a lot of great competitive games and everything's down to the wire.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. Eric, I'll see you at the arena tonight.
Yes, you will. All right.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you. Thanks for the time. Eric Crawford with us here on the V Show on ESPN 680 1057. Hey, we want to know Wednesday fact for you about the New York Mets' new manager. His name is...
This is not Carlos Beltran.
Luis Rojas.
Price.
But I did not know this, and I'm going to bet most of you did not also, maybe simply because...
That means...
His last name is
Louis
Rojas.
Red.
Very good. Rojas is actually the son of Felipe Alou, former Major League manager, and the brother of Moises Alou.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But he goes by Luis Rojas. I'm not entirely sure why.
He likes the color red.
He likes to be Louis Red. So there you go. Yeah, we've got some texts coming in about You know, I mean, listen, again, it's not one of those things where you got to think badly or something to say it. David Johnson's a good player and going to be a great player going forward. But, you know, Johnson had a couple of careless turnovers towards the end of the Duke game, and that's what Chris even talked about. So he's got room for improvement. And because of that, it's safe to say that not every game for him, the same as it is for anybody else, is going. They're not little video game players. They're going to have some ups and downs, especially as a freshman. Nick's desperately telling me to go to break, so I'm going to do that. I don't know why. What, we got something coming up here that I need to know.
You
got to
go record stuff.
Yeah.
And we have a guest that's scheduled now. We're not going to get
why
to
do you
him.
Schedule people at 2? Why would you do that? No disrespect, but we're never on at 2. You got spots. You got the sports center. You got to go.
Get right, well, I scheduled them at 2, just like that.
Who is it, by the way?
It's our friend, Neil Greenberg.
He'll be Washington fine. Post. We'll talk with him in a bit.
Yeah, I scheduled them at 2, and they know that, you know, yeah, we'll probably get him about 2:05.
Rather than just schedule them at 2:05.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, Future You gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future You goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.